This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Mel Driscoll, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, and to all the fathers out there.
Sorry, I forgot. Happy Father's Day. I'll have to find a song for the fathers next.
Well, we have Robert Clark from the New Zealand International Film Festival and during the course of this film festival, we attract a lot of international films. Is that a particular interest of yours, that it should be based on other cultures, other nations than ours?
Well, when we first talked, Mel, 2 weeks ago, I did remark that part of the appeal of the Film Society's movies is that you get to explore other cultures and their themes and issues. So you could say that it's a favourite of mine. It's very much an opportunity to learn about other cultures and things that we don't think about, like, you know, for example, displacement, national identity, cultural identity, etc. So this film festival has been quite interesting, actually. I've seen, so far, 8 movies.
That's a lot to fit in a working week.
Well, fortunately, I've had it, I think it's about 11 days now, but fitting it in with my working life, it is sometimes a drama, but this year's schedule was quite kind to me and gave me a lot of 6:15 movies that I could go to in the mid-evening. Possibly the best movie I saw was a movie called The Outrun, which I saw last night. It's Saoirse Ronan's most recent movie about a Orkney girl who goes to London in search of real life, as it were, and then discovers that life isn't so good, becomes an alcoholic, etc., etc., and then goes home to recover and resume normal life. It's mostly filmed in the Orkney Islands. Haha.
I think people will be saying, where? I can tell you, Scotland, off the coast of Scotland. It's called Orkney.
The northern coast of Scotland.
Yep, there's...
Almost in Denmark. She actually goes to Westray, which is possibly closer to Denmark than Scotland.
Yeah, what I've read of the Orkneys, it's where Scarpa Flow is. And a warship got blown up in World War II in that area. It was the HMS... I forget. That's where the Churchill barriers are in that particular area. That's for another day. But back to this movie. Sorry to interrupt your train of thought.
That's okay. It's a pleasant movie. It's very, very well made and very good watching. I was intrigued to see, one, a couple of stone circles, but two, the fact that Saoirse was actually... Well, her character, rather, was actually monitoring the planes over her head on Flat Radar, which is a website I like. But she also took a liking to the International Space Station, which I'd also probably
do. Did it start to get a bit weird?
Some of the mythology around the Orkney Islands... How am I going to call them the Orkney Islands? Anyway, some of the mythology is actually... If you've seen Secret of Ronan, it has a certain amount of similarity to that. The Outrun, if you haven't seen it, well worth seeing. And one of 3 movies that we're having encore screenings of, the other being Restless, the story of Paul Simon, and Tree of the Sacred Fig. Those screenings are after the main event, which finishes on Wednesday. The closing film this year is a movie called The Substance, which is a Demi Moore movie about a aging actress who she decides to take this thing called The Substance, but basically it generates an alternative version of her, an alternative younger version of her, and they alternate, if I understand correctly, they alternate week on, week off to live her life for her, but needless to say, immortality has its price, and... Yeah. Demi Moore starts to break down.
Do you think it's a bit semi-autobiography?
I wouldn't go there, but it's an interesting reflection on the fad of plastic surgery, which we
Well,
we didn't go through it, but, you know, our society, we had a fondness for it, the 1980s and 90s, and there's a general feeling that that's starting to backfire in some of the protagonists. So this movie, I guess, is an exposition of that.
Yeah, no, of course, I think Demi Moore is one of the caregivers for her former husband, Bruce Willis, who's, of course, now retired. He hasn't got many years to go, so he's slowly dying, but he's still alive, but it's that process, it's the waiting. So,
yeah, some people, age isn't kind to them.
Yep. So this going back to the Paul Simon movie, do you think him and Art Garfunkel will ever make up?
My feeling without knowing anything particular about their issues is probably not. Generally speaking, the more energy is involved in a disagreement, the less likely it is it comes back together. And a lot of the performers that split up with their bands and their other halves, as it were, for whatever reason, don't come back together.
I think the rumour was that Art Garfunkel went off to make Carnal Knowledge, the movie that he starred in, and Paul Simon wasn't a happy man after that. So, well, that's only a rumour. Anyway, moving on to other movies.
All We Imagine as Light, a film that's to be shown today, screening at 3:00. Know anything about it? Conversation on the female gaze in cinema finds apt material for a case study.
Don't you just love the way that inverted commas academics write film descriptions? I mean, sometimes I'll sit and watch a movie and it actually, at least in the way it resonates to me, it doesn't seem to actually fit the description.
It keeps PR people in business.
Well, it does, but it highlights the difference in perspective that film academics have to perhaps normal people such as ourselves, who relate to the movie perhaps on an emotional level rather than the technical aspects of the fact the light was brilliant in that scene. Though the light probably was brilliant in that scene, I'm not saying it isn't, I'm just saying that our motivation for seeing that movie probably isn't necessarily the proficiency of the director.
And of course it brings to the fore the method acting process too.
Yeah, someone, Saoirse Ronan had an interview with someone on the BBC once, and they were talking in formal terms about the craft, i.e. the way that she was going about constructing the acting for her role. And I'm just basically sitting there almost, I wouldn't say confused, but perhaps bemused is a better way of putting it, because I'm more a fan of the sort of more naturalistic sort of acting performance rather than thinking about it in terms of there's an actual methodology to it. Mm-hmm. Thomasin McKenzie once said that she lives her roles rather than trying to become them, which is probably more in the direction of the way I think about acting. It still works, I mean, but it just kind of perplexed me that there was this formalization of the process of acting that...
You're probably thinking method acting, people say. Yeah, think Marlon Brando. One of the greatest method actors in the world, James Dean.
All We Imagine as Light is about two nurses, it says, sharing an apartment. Very common situation. One's husband is working in Germany, and Anu, who has a secret relationship with a Muslim man.
Ooh, tut-tut.
That's bad on several levels, but... you know, it would be interesting to explore the cultural aspects of that problem.
Two languages employed, Malayalam and Hindi, but English subtitles for our benefit.
Oh, good, because I have an Indian colleague who's introduced me to some Indian cinema, and I can assure you that my knowledge of Indian languages is not good.
Yeah, with all these movies you go along and see, and some of the subjects, do you not come along? Do you not leave the theatre feeling a bit depressed afterwards?
As we discussed last time, sometimes it's actually in an ironic sort of way, life-affirming to what, I mean, it's like Saoirse Ronan's movie Outrun. I mean, she goes through this experience, which is really, really horrific for her. But, you know, she comes out a normal person and well, we presume she goes back to a air quotes, normal life. And it's about these people dealing with these issues and actually overcoming them, because a lot of the issues that you see in a movie aren't actually just imaginary. They're things that actually do happen in real life. And we all have our struggles with things, large or small. And sometimes, you know, it's good to see that people do actually overcome the big stuff. Obviously, if you're watching Machete, she doesn't, but that's also a thing. You know, sometimes it doesn't actually end well, but it's the ironically life-affirming way that those movies pan out, good or bad. There are some movies that aren't necessarily the most cheerful things in the world. I mean, I can think of sort of English movies like The Rat Catcher or Jessica Barden's Ellen or the works of Ken Loach.
Yeah, I think that was broached the other night when I was watching the Midas Man, the story of Brian Epstein, his struggle with his homosexuality, and of course he took an accidental dose of
presuming that this is not now. I mean, the 21st century is a very enlightened place, but the 60s, 70s, and 80s, I mean, it would be a struggle.
I remember some of the movies that were based on the plays by Joe Orton. Mm. Yeah, they were pretty interesting also. And
Know anything about the film Sons? It's in the category screening Monday, tomorrow, 8:30, a late one. Curious, because it doesn't seem to...
Is that the one about the prison guard?
Let's have a look. It's produced to be very customer friendly, these dossiers here.
It's a very well put together program, I have to admit. The sparse use of the colour borders, etc., just to accentuate things.
Sons, a Monday night movie, as part of the Hamilton International Film Festival.
Yeah, it's the one about the prison guard who, I'm presuming from the title, relates to her charges more as offspring than fellow prison inmates, as it were. Probably on the list of things that are life-affirming and perhaps not the most cheerful in the world, but that's okay. It's imprisoned by guilt and grief, ever as a crossroad to choose forgiveness or revenge or rehabilitation, and her mental...
It's curious how you can condense a two-hour film into a few paragraphs in that entice people to want to watch it in some expectation of what it's about.
Yeah, and also, I mean, as I said before, the difference between... there are levels of description... You can describe it just in terms of story or in terms of, I'd say it's technical merits, but there are also different ways of experiencing movie. I mean, I've talked, for example, about the fact that I tend to experience my movies at a more emotional level and a technical level. It doesn't mean that I don't recognise the fact that the director did something awesome. I mean, if you think, for example, about Evil Does Not Exist, that was...
Yeah, of course, in the mainstream at the moment, there's a lot of talk about that movie, about domestic violence, the movie I'm talking about, which is from a book, and it's in the mainstream theatres right at this moment, and there's been a lot of talk about that movie too. So it gets talked about, don't they, these movies? Mm.
Do you get maxed out in a film festival that you say, of this festival in the last fortnight, you've witnessed 8 films? It's a lot to take in.
It'll be 10 by the time I'm finished.
It's a lot.
Tonight's movie is The Green Border, and I'm actually seeing when the light breaks on closing day.
Mm-hmm. Will you give it a rest then?
I usually watch around about one movie a day anyway, so no. But we do notice at Film Society that for the screenings, for the remainder of the year, we do actually notice that people do sort of slow down a bit. Mm-hmm. And after the film festival, I guess that they do get tired. Speaking of that, we're running a membership special for the rest of the year. It's $80 for 12 movies. The 11 in our regular season and one surprise screening, which will be the final one in, I think, early December.
And that's a non-profit enterprise.
Yeah.
The Hamilton Film Society have been going how many years?
Since 1947.
Ooh.
My maths has failed me, but I think that's
60 plus years ago.
Yeah.
Has the friend of the show, Richard Swainson, turned up at some of these movies? Have you seen him in the same theatre as you? And
from Auteur House, well known for...
I do know who Richard Swainson is. He was at the quiz yesterday, amongst other things.
The quiz.
It's hard to experience a movie that Richard's in without knowing he's in it. I'll put it that way.
Well, you hear his laugh. That's the main thing. Yeah, no, the basis of the title, of course, these are social issue movies. And hey, it's been... When does the film festival end?
It finishes on Wednesday with The Substance at 8, I think it's 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Except that, we'll caveat that with there are three encore screenings after that.
And that's in response to the public demand?
Presumably, and judging from the fact that the Outrun last night was sold out when I was there, so I'm presuming that these are movies that a lot of people want to see and perhaps have been disappointed, so there's that extra opportunity for you.
Yeah. I'd like to think when I go to the movies at the Lido or Hoyts, the staff, mostly young, brilliant. They are great. Mm. They have got a sense of humour and they do give you whatever you want, your coffee or a bit of a wine if you're into wine, and they look after you. And thanks to the staff at Hoyts and also at the Lido. So they look after you too.
Yeah.
And they enjoy movies.
They do. They put in a team at the quiz yesterday. I was quite impressed.
Who won the quiz yesterday?
Do you need to ask that? It was Richard and the Auto House All-Stars again. Yeah. Having won in Auckland as well.
Oh, we'll have to get Richard in here to please explain from Richard. He's probably been watching too many episodes of The Chase, so...
doubt it.
We thank Robert Clark, talking of the New Zealand International Film Festival and of the Hamilton Film Society, in which he's an avid member.
Well, we will have to get you back to talk about movies at the Film Society one of these days, because you bring us all the news, and I've got to go and pick up some stuff from the Lido on the next movies that are coming up. Other than movies, we've got to talk about the... Sunday, 8 September, which is next weekend, is the Refugee Youth Hui at a reception lounge, Hamilton City Council, 260 Anglesey Street. A refugee youth-led Hui seeking to hear how they can meaningfully participate in the life of the city. It is hosted by the Waikato Refugee Forum and other partners. And on the next day... This radio station you're listening to, or I hope you're listening to at the moment, is hosting an open day from 1 o'clock onwards. Testing, testing, testing. I'm reading the script here. Learn more about how community radio stations, how to host shows and podcasts and more. Please register with the crew here. And it's hosted by Free FM 834-2170. Just been reminded it is Father's Day too. So to all the fathers out there, this is Sir Cliff Richard. This is a remake of Daddy's Home.
You're my love, you're my angel, you're the girl of my dreams, and I'd like to thank you for waiting patiently.
There must have been a problem there with the track, but that is Daddy's Home, and that, of course, is Sir Cliff Richard. I'll have a look on the CD while Mel is talking to our next guest, Mel.
Henry Rowe, you joined the workforce early on in life in Urenui, in Taranaki.
Yes,
that's you,
yes,
isn't
that's
it?
Correct. Yes.
Yes. What were you going out to work about those days?
I was asked to work in the country general store.
How old were you?
Mr. Charlie Dunbar. And he asked me to if I'd like to work down there, and I said, yes, I would do. So I went home and told my grandmother, who was a married lady. I was brought up by my grandparents. And I told her, and she said, well, that's all right, you do that. So, like Mr. Dunbar told me, he said, well, you come back down to work tomorrow in your work clothes and that. So little Mary boy, me, I went down there to work with my bare feet. And he looked at me and he said, Henry, you can't work here bare feet. You go home, you got any shoes? He said, you go home, wash your feet, put your socks and shoes on. So I went home because we didn't have a proper bathroom in our old house. And, so I washed my feet in the basin at the back door. And my grandmother come along and she's very limited in English. And she said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm washing my feet. I've got to put my shoes and socks on. Can't work bare feet. Ah, bloody silly Pākehā.
How old were you?
Kitteri, how do you get the money? How do you get the money? Kitteri. Yeah.
Yeah. How old were you then, Henry?
Your grandmother must have been a great lady.
Oh, yes, she was. She was quite an influence to me. We always done the gardening together. My grandfather, he was busy training racehorses and that for the local publican.
Mm-hmm.
And going here and there, you know, all over the race courses and that.
Yes.
And that, yeah. And he was also delivering beer, too.
Yeah.
And that, of course, those days in the late 40s and into the early 50s, you see, the King Country was dry.
Yep.
You couldn't buy beer in the King Country, yep. I suppose, as you will know. And, of course, a lot of the people from all up around Awakino, Mahanui, they'd ring up the Urenui Hotel. And they, you know, after shearing or haymaking that, they might want 4 dozen of booze and a couple of bottles of gin and a couple of bottles of whiskey. So they'd ring up the Urenui Hotel and my grandfather would deliver it for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because for the hotel. And because he had a taxi license and they had a private taxi.
In that era, my friend, of course, many houses at Hales Māori did not have wooden floors. It was dirt. Was that your case?
Yeah, no. Our place was a wooden floor. It was quite a big place. I found out later on that our house, which my grandfather bought, and right in the middle of Urenui, it was a fish and chip shop. It was owned by a Chinese man. Yeah. He used to train the Jim Murphy's racehorses and then, and because he had a taxi license, and their taxi license was actually a private taxi license. They had certain limitations on it, I believe, a private taxi.
When you
and their taxi, I'll just have to go on about here. Their taxi was, I had never seen one for a long, long time in here in New Zealand, was a Ford Lincoln Zephyr V12.
Big car, wasn't it?
Yeah, big car, yeah.
What colour?
Used to do all the deliveries and that.
What colour was it?
Black.
I remember the patrol cars of the traffic officers were also black at about that stage when they used to run around in Zephyrs.
Yeah. Yes, well, you see, they turned that into a taxi, private taxi, because in 1948, I remember it well. I was only young, about 7 or 8 then, and Jim Murphy's eldest son, Pat, he bought the first 1948 Mercury, Ford Mercury. Yeah.
So where did your work take you when you left school, Henry? Because you'd been working before the official time when you go out into the workforce, weren't you?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, I used to go to work and, of course, we were having to wear shoes to work. And that's how I put my shoes on to go next door. Because Charlie Dunbar and his wife lived in one flat next door, and his second eldest son, Owen, and his wife lived in their front flat. So I just go Norton Moor next door about 6:15 and get the keys, and I go down and open up and do a lot of work and that before school, before I went to school.
How old were you?
12, 13.
Very young to have the responsibility like that.
Well, that's right, yeah, that's right, yeah. Quite a few people are amazed that they sort of bestow that responsibility onto me.
Well, yeah. Were you a good boy at school?
I suppose I was. I can say I was, yeah.
So what happened yesterday, Henry?
Well, we had a jolly good time.
Yes?
A jolly good time going down to Tokoroa. I couldn't get out and visit around Tokoroa, but I, you know, going back to the old days when I worked there. And that, but no, I enjoyed it very immensely.
How were you travelling?
By train. We went on the train on the Glenbrook Vintage Railway.
Special occasion?
Well, it was. One of my eldest daughter rung me up and said she bought the tickets for this occasion because for my Father's Day.
Hey, happy Father's Day to you too. We are celebrating.
Well, thank you, and the same to you, my good man.
Well, I'm not a father, but while you were there, did you run into our mutual friend Mel and I, JD? Did you run into JD there?
Yes, yeah, I ran into him when we got back to the platform at the Franklin Station.
So yeah, which route did this?
There and they got talking about this and that, and yeah, I said, yeah, no, I'll be very pleased to speak with you.
Yeah. Oh, look, it brings back lots of memories. Did you ride a horse when you went to school?
Well, I used to ride, my grandfather used to put me on the race horses, but he said it was too bloody rough. Yeah, I was too bloody rough. So I used to have to ring up my cousin, Michael. And coach, and because my grandfather had great hope for him being a jockey, because he always said that. Well, at least with the, because here's another thing too. My cousin Michael, you wouldn't do it nowadays, way things are. But his name was Nigger.
Oh,
yeah. We all called him Nigger.
Well, we can't use that word on air. Sorry about that, but
the train that took you yesterday, Henry, it would have taken you south along the rails there, but down the other end it would be familiar ground for you because you worked down that way.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So you passed in the train the old concrete water tower at Tiro?
Yes, yes. And I'll tell you what, on the way home too, and I'll tell you, my daughters did, they said, that castle up on the hill at Tiro.
I haven't been through Tirao or Petaluru for a long time, so I'm just trying to think where it is.
When you go through, if you're heading south to Tokoroa, I didn't see it till on the way home, because I was sitting on the left-hand side, and I looked up on the hill watching the countryside and that, you know, and all I said to my grandson, I said, hey, there's a tower, a castle up there on the hill, look at it, yeah, yeah.
So there were lots of people travelling, and they went into the town when it stopped down the line, did it?
Yes, quite a few did walk up to Tokoroa, yeah.
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 Oh, you've told some brilliant stories. Finally, what do you say to this generation of Māori? Because we're getting if you watch Parliament, it's not a nice place to, between the fighting, infighting between the MPs. What do you think of today's Māori today?
I think that I'm very disappointed, really, because this last election, they went out and voted to Party Māori, which, to my mind, they're going to do all for the...
We can't speak like that.
Just
that is what I actually think.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, and Māori's being bloody Māori's. They're bloody turncoats. We are bloody turncoats. They turned around and voted to Party Māori, and how many Māori MPs were in the Labour Party?
Anyway,
and they kicked them out?
Yeah, sorry, we've got to leave it there, I'm afraid, my friend. We'll
all right, then, that's okay.
Yep. We'll talk next time. So,
all right, then, thank you very much.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Thank you, Henry.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Nice, pleasure.
Bye.
Thank you.
We apologise. That was his own thoughts. Maybe I shouldn't have asked that question, but we were mentioning cars, and the Zephyrs that Mel mentioned. In Britain, they had Z cars. Stratford Johns used to travel around in a Zephyr. Z cars from 1962, Johnny Keating Orchestra. Remembering the Zephyrs from Z Cars. That's what they call them. It's 25 to 2. Our next guest, Mel.
Stuart Barclay. He is the owner-operator of Adrift Tongariro, an outdoor adventure guiding company based out of Taupo and Rupehu, exploring the Tongariro and Whanganui National Parks. But there's deep divides in the towns around, I understand, because National Park, Whakapapa, Turoa, ski fields, snow, it all seems to be in flux. What do you say to that?
Yeah, g'day. Interesting conversation point. We've been operating down in the Tongariro and Whanganui National Parks for 25 years now. And we've seen tourism business increase incredibly, really, up into the COVID period of time, 2020. And then obviously took a big hit with COVID and then slowly building up again since then. So it's been an interesting 25 years, not without challenges. Mostly the challenges we face in this area would be environmental, dealing with good snow years, bad snow years, eruptions, rain, wind, you name it. And most operations that are working in the outdoor environment have kind of got themselves set up to manage them with the environmental changes. It's the non-environmental issues that probably hit the area the hardest. And that's, in my view, and it's only my view really, and maybe representative of others, is that there's a balancing act always between the environment and commercial interest.
Yep.
And we as a populace have to manage that really well.
Yep. I think the future also of Whakapapa will also be into the future of Chateau Tongariro, which is in the same area. And I'm looking at a beautiful picture right now of Chateau Tongariro.
On the front page of the Sunday Star Times.
So what's the future of Chateau Tongariro?
Well, knew that I'd probably invest into something and make $1 million overnight, but it's in the lap of not the gods, but really of bureaucracy, and that's one of the issues that we really have trouble grappling with.
Yeah.
Is the commercial ability or lack of by some of the governmental institutions that are managing the place.
Yep.
It looks so forlorn, doesn't it, sitting in that landscape. with all the magnificence of the agricultural of the time. Did I say agriculture? I mean architectural. Architectural style of the day. It's a magnificent building, ideal for film venues, I believe.
And another problem too is Mount Ruapehu. It blows off steam every once in a while. Is it settled at the moment? We've had trouble at with White Island recently. So is it peaceful with Mount Ruapehu?
No, and it'll never be settled as such in my lifetime. Hopefully, it is an active vent that is continuously either getting hotter or colder, letting off heat from its vents, and it continually oscillates between about the temperature of the crater lake where the vent is underneath of oscillates between 10 and 50 degrees. I think that's pretty good. As if it hangs around the end of those extremities for too long, then the volcanologists get a bit worried.
Yeah.
But that interrupts. Volcanoes do that.
Yep.
And you know, we kind of live with that.
Yeah. We don't want another Tungurahua disaster, do we?
No. They're just pretty well managed and monitored, really, and very good at telling us it is happening or what has happened.
Yep.
And not quite so, we don't have quite enough data yet to predict when it's going to happen, but they can give us information about increase in certain levels and, you know, what has happened in the past that has reached these levels for this time.
Of course, there are other mountains in the area too. What are the other mountains in the area?
Narahoe, Tongariro are the two of the three. Ruapehu, Narahoe, Tongariro are the three big famous mountains. There's lots of other vents, past and present, that are there. There's the Tama Lake, there's Pukeonaki, Hauhangatahi, and then over on the west coast there is Taranaki. 140 k's away is the crow fly, providing the crow's not too drunk and go straight.
And what is the reaction of your tour groups when you venture into the upper levels of these mountains? National Park.
Oh, they just love it. It's, you know, the Ruapehu region and Taupo with the lake, it's a stunning environment. It really is. And I, you know, and those that are involved in the outdoor business as I am, we just love showing it off. It's an easy job. We've got to work and we sweat a bit for 8 hours, as I'm going to do tomorrow. That's the hardest part of it. The easy part is we don't have to fabricate anything, and we just sit there and show them the views and talk about when the eruptions have happened and how they're not going to happen today, we hope, and all that stuff. It really is a stunning part of the world.
Yeah. Of course, the trouble for tourism in New Zealand, and of course, Chateau Tongariro and Waitomo were once owned under THC by the government. Then Rogenomics hit us, and everything not nailed down was sold off.
Well, that's the cycle of life, isn't it, on the commercial front? The problem is you've got to ask the question, why has the Chateau not been sold off now? And I think one of the barbs in that answer is because there's the inability to come up with a commercial solution for a potential purchaser. There's quite a few little hooks in the commercial reality of operating that business, none smaller perhaps than negotiating a decent lease with the Department of Conservation that enables a future purchaser to invest millions of dollars to get it up to scratch.
Mm-hmm. Who is the current Minister of Tourism? Have you been in contact with him? Who?
No, I haven't, to be honest, and I can't think of his name offhand.
Isn't Barbara Courier, I don't know how you pronounce her second name. She's the member for Taranaki. Is it in her area or?
So we're not Taranaki. We're Ruapehu and Taupo.
So you're in Louise Upston's land. Has Louise Upston seen you or?
She's been amazing over the last 10 years in hearing our voice and taking on the issues. And, she's been a great advocate for the local economy, really, doing what she can and what the party now can do to help the economy survive and then thrive.
Maybe you should get Shane Jones onto the job.
Yes, yeah, I'm sure he'd tell us what he thinks.
So much hinges on the state of the snow, because that's what people come to see.
Yeah, so I'm going to disagree with that slightly. Snow in winter is obviously the big draw card, and that's the number one thing here. But you may remember back in 95 and 96 when the mountains erupted, the whole industry, local industry at that time, was really 100% focused on the ski and the snow. And when it erupted, it was terrible timing, just the beginning of the 96 ski season. A lot of the business really struggled, and quite a few went out of business because they were purely relying on the snow. So that's really when the Tongariro Alpine Crossing started becoming popular. The local businesses said, well, we need a 12-month-a-year model, not just a 3-month or 4-month snow business model, and started investing time and effort into promoting and developing the Tongariro Alpine Crossing to tourism. And that was incredibly successful over the next 20-odd years until COVID, really.
Yeah.
So successful that certain elements were peoples were saying, well, hang on, is it getting too successful? Do we want it to be that successful?
Yeah, isn't Owakuni just up the road from you too? And
Up, down, across, 35 k's away.
So they've got the big carrots. So do tourists flock to Owakuni then? If the snow's great, they come down to the fields?
Oh, absolutely both sides. So Owakuni really is a beautiful little town that supports the Turoa ski field, and National Park Village is another gorgeous little mountain village that is around the Whakapapa ski field. So both are incredibly busy when the snow's on, which hasn't been this year.
So you've had all those artificial snow machines out and
God, it looks like there's hundreds of them, and on the, I can really only talk to the Whakapapa side because I don't really go around the Owakuni side a lot. It's most of my business is around this side.
Yeah.
And driving up to Whakapapa, you see a big brown landscape where the snow is not, and then a beautiful white tongue of snow where the snow machines and what I call the big slushy machine has been producing snow for the Happy Valley. It's just an amazing what job they have managed to do in this awful winter for snowmaking.
Yeah. Of course, about 10 years plus ago, my family were in Taupo and we came up to Chateau Tongariro, sat outside, it was a fine day, and then the fog came in, enveloped the chateau. It was real Christmas card feeling.
Yeah, that's the mountains for you.
Hey, keep us up informed on what's going to happen next to Chateau Tongariro and the mountains. Thank you, my friend, for being part of Free FM today.
My pleasure.
It's a pleasure. Bye-bye. The latest news out of Chateau Tongariro and, of course, the mountains, Ruapehu, Narahoe and Tongariro. Interesting part of the world. It's 13 minutes to 2. Maybe we're going to speak next to, hopefully, Gary Schofield before 2 o'clock. We missed him last week, but at the Democratic Conference, this man appeared. He sung this song. This is the great Stevie Wonder. Be talking to Gary this week, hopefully next week, because I do want to talk about what happened at Arlington National Cemetery with Donald Trump and his gang invading a sacred part of the country and the goings on. So, well, of course, this young Stuart was there a couple of weeks ago, and I'm angry about the desecration of a sacred site in Washington, D.C. Good afternoon, Dwayne Porter.
Yeah, good afternoon, troops. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
Have you wished Happy Father's Day to your old man?
Yes, I did, actually. I rang him first thing this morning.
And what did he say to you?
He said, thank you very much.
Then he probably hung up on you.
No, he didn't.
happy Father's Day, and we'll play another Cliff Richard song shortly before Trev comes in. So, what's the latest in cars and automobiles? And
it's not cars, it's mainly truck rollovers. Why do we have so many truck rollovers?
Tell us.
I did a survey at the moment of what's being caused of so many truck rollovers. Most companies are making their drivers work overtime.
Well, aren't they following the rules? There's rule books. They've got books in there.
It's log books.
The log books.
They do the log books. Do over the 10-hour break. They don't have a 10-hour break.
Same with bus drivers. They've got to have a break, but with their truck drivers, they falsify. Well, some of them allegedly falsify their log books, go to court, and they lose their licenses to drive.
You can falsify that log book. You can carry two log books in your truck. You can have two drivers in your truck. You can have one driver does the day shift and the driver does the night shift.
Yeah, the courts take it very seriously if you falsify records and go to jail. Your livelihood's gone. It's anyway. So what's these rollovers carrying too much cargo?
Carrying too much cargo. Example, last week, Open Country Cheese rolled a truck and trailer, had a full load of milk on, going down the bottom of the coal mines.
Oh.
Speed. Right behind him was Fonterra, did the same.
There's an old joke about cheese on the road, I won't tell you that. It's
no, it wasn't cheese, it was milk and cream.
Well,
to go to the
it's a bad mix. Anyway,
so that's what it was. So I did a thing. Apparently, it's a big thing with so many truck rollovers and so many accidents. The cops are blaming. Even people blame about truck drivers, or trucks are going too slow in it. Mm. There's a thing that you've got to realise is that if you're coming across on the back of the trucks, they've got called conclusions.
Anyway, we've got to leave it there. We'll have more information next week for you. But we've got to play a song for Father's Day. We failed with Daddy's Home. Got all these fathers, old and young. Yeah, so we'll play a song for you. Then we'll talk to Trevor as we leave you for the day. That, of course, there's teen fathers out there, so they'll maybe celebrating with their whānau today and their mokapunas on Father's Day. Good afternoon, sir.
Ah, good afternoon. Now, I often talk about the cyclists and the use of the cycle lanes, which, of course, is virtually non-resistant, all right on footpaths. I looked across the road at the Hamilton campus. I got a large cycle rack there. I don't ever see any cycles in it. I saw a motor scooter in there at one stage. But it shows you how things are, not really what they're planning out to be for the council.
Yep.
Now, I was reading the latest Waikato paper. Was it the Waikato Still Times?
Oh, yeah.
Got another name.
It's gone through so many changes of names.
And I saw a photograph of the city council councillors at a meeting to try and solve their financial woes. Well, I counted, what I could see in the photograph, 27 councillors. Well, I thought to myself, there's a start. If they can't solve the financial problems, I'll do it for them. Get someone in to monitor their staffing levels there.
Yeah.
And have a lean cut on how many members they've got. What do they all do, these 27 councillors?
Well, does that include the Māori wards too?
I'm not sure whether that was, but based on the photograph, even if that was including that,
yeah,
it shouldn't need any more one or two people for all those roles.
Did you hear my comment earlier that I read the story about we've got to stop spending? Then at the end of the story, of course, they're going to spend money on furniture and Garden Place.
Oh no!
Fix the grates in Hood Street, and put furniture outside the new theatre when it's built. So. There must be some money somewhere for all this.
Well, I'm going to feel like writing a letter and say, hold your horses. Are you in debt or aren't you?
Yeah.
I mean, the way they carry on. And another thing, what are they doing in that 8-storey building that they work in? Do they need it? Can't they find a more modest and smaller building? Yeah. That'll save a lot. And also, they sort of look at ways of how they manage their money, basically. Yeah.
Well, we'll find another story next week for you. Hopefully it's not council business, but there's many more stories to tell out there. Thanks for your company this afternoon, folks. We apologise for one of our callers using two words that he shouldn't have used. We shut him down. Hopefully we don't get any complaints. It was his comments, the use of the N-word and the F-word. We apologise profusely this afternoon on Cosmopolitan News and Views. Well, we're into the 1st of September. This day in 1939, Germany invaded Poland. 2 days later, we went to war. Yes, it's that week that World War II started. And, of course, summer's on the way. We'll leave you. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.